My name is Lori Chan Luna. I am 68 years old, and today we are in Fresno, California. It is Friday, February 28th, 2020, and I'm going to introduce my brother.
My name is Lanny Chan, and I am age 70. Today is Friday, February 28th, 2020, in Fresno, California. And just sitting here with my sister, Lori, and looking forward to holding on a conversation.
And so what are we going to talk about? First, we'll talk about our family, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's where we're going to, good place to start.
Okay, you can start.
Okay. Well, it, go back to our father, Gay Chan, who was born in Oakland, California, July 5th, 1908. He eventually came to Visalia, California, which was a small town about, not so small anymore, but a small town about 50 miles south of Fresno in the Central Valley of California, Fruit Belt. But then my mother, who was born in Oregon, Heppner, Oregon, on January 6th in the year 1916,
which makes us third-generation Americans. Our parents both, they both went back to China to take their father's remains, and is that right? Yes.
Actually, dad was still alive. It was mom's dad had passed away, and they took him back to China.
What happened to dad's dad?
Dad's dad, then they, the family, the Chinese culture, our background is Chinese, and are the Chinese that immigrated to the United States never really intended to stay in the States. Their goal was to make a living and accumulate wealth and go travel home.
Yeah.
Home was China.
So he went back when he was alive? I didn't realize that.
Because the story is that he was a tailor, and he made his fortune here in the United States and then went back home. One of our uncles, Uncle David, one of my dad's brothers, actually, the story is that Grandpa and Uncle Dave had vests that were, inside the vests were sewn $20 gold pieces. And that's how they transported the wealth that they had accumulated here in the U.S. back to China.
Well, and mom's mother, our grandmother, did that as well. But she traveled back to China with her husband's body.
Correct.
And seven children. So, or is it nine children?
Well, two of them stayed here.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that, you know, it was Auntie Eunice and Auntie Marion who stayed, and all the younger kids went back. And I was always really amazed that these two young women, you know, at the outbreak of, when the Japanese invaded China, those two young women, our aunts, took a boat back to China and brought all the children and
grandma
back. And you know, they were just young. I can't imagine myself doing that, or, you know, my kids doing that, going back. And, you know, grandma didn't want to come back. And those two girls, you know, by sheer will, they just made sure that they got on the last boat to come back.
Yeah. The story, I guess, as I recall, was that grandma did not want to come back. Mm-hmm. She wanted to stay in China. Mm-hmm. But the reason the two sisters, her daughters, went back, they were actually to retrieve her and the family back to. Mm-hmm. And you're right that the story is in 1935, they took the last U.S. cruise ship out of China and came back to the United States.
That was the USS?
I don't know. I don't remember. I forgot the name of the ship. But the idea is it was the last ship.
Yeah.
And Mom remembered in the village, there was a, like, I remember she tells a story about how there were Japanese aircraft, there was a railroad line that went through the area, And there were times when Japanese aircraft would come and attack the airline, the railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. And she remembers some of the fighting there.
Yeah.
So it was a very difficult time, just the precursor to World War II. Yeah.
Well, and it's a good thing that they both ended up back in the United States, because that's where my father met my mother.
Mm-hmm.
He had a produce route. And I remember Mom saying, she had gone to a dance with somebody and...
In Fresno.
Yeah, in Fresno. And Dad somehow went to the truck she was in and pulled her out of the truck and said, "No, you're coming home with me." Is that the story?
Yes, that's the story. I guess the situation was that, like I said, Mom was born in Oregon, but and the father had our grandfather had a restaurant bakery there, an established business, and had really no intentions. He married a local gal. Paul was from Oregon, and all of her siblings stayed in the Oregon. Mm-hmm. While she was the only one to leave and come to California. And it was due to our grandfather was the right-hand, very trusted individual of somebody who basically convinced him that he should move to Fresno and be a partner in his business. And that's how they were able to relocate and did locate to Fresno, all the family.
Well, and the business was a gambling house, right?
Yes. I think correctly, politically correct term would be social hall.
Oh, social hall.
As a sidebar, though, that that individual, the right-hand man, the person that hired Grandpa, is Kathy's grandfather.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a small world.
Wow.
But they did come to Fresno, and Mom worked and went to school here in West Fresno. It was a large Chinese population here in Fresno at the time. And then, like you say, Dad was actually migrated to Visalia. He had picked fruit as a young man and done some various mm-hmm. things in Chinatown. And then, but actually had traveled to Visalia during the winter and began working for, like you say, the produce distributor. It's Brown's Market, I believe was the name. And they actually had horse-drawn vehicles, and they would deliver produce to people outside in the surrounding area of Visalia. And eventually, and this was in the 1920s, and eventually Dad, he recruited two of his brothers, and they ended up buying the business and opened up Chan Brothers Market in Visalia, California. But my dad would actually go to Fresno all the time to buy his produce and then take it back, drive back down to Visalia. And it was at... again, one of these dances that the Chinese population here, like many ethnic groups, they tended to stay together and did a lot of things together. So culturally, there is a big center of influence here, Chinese influence in Fresno. And that's how I met Mom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He swept her off her feet, figuratively and literally. Yes.
And seven children later.
Yeah. But Aunt Virginia, the youngest, remember Aunt Virginia, she's the youngest of the Mom's sisters and brothers. And she recalls Aunt Virginia is still alive here in Fresno. She's the only remaining of that generation. But she recalls the story about wondering who this man was that swept Mom off her feet. Because it was like 3 months after they met that they were married.
Mm-hmm.
And they uprooted her and moved her to Visalia. Yeah.
It's a pretty dramatic story. And... you know, I don't remember our parents I can't imagine when they were young, because by the time I came along, they were, you know, in their 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so different from Mom's mom, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
She was in an arranged marriage, and our grandfather, when I first read the story about them, you know, he was 17 years her senior.
Huh.
And it was an arranged marriage. And, you know, that wasn't that long ago. Maybe because I'm getting older, it doesn't seem like that long ago. But
yeah.
But I want to talk a little bit about Mom. You know, she was so talented. She was multi-talented. I think of her as being a sort of a Renaissance woman.
Yeah, that's the word that comes to my mind, too.
Yeah, she was so talented and so smart. And I think about our lives. You know, Dad, you know, because he only went to the sixth grade, you know, he wasn't highly educated, but he was really smart and hardworking. And Mom went to the eighth grade only, but I think about her a lot about, you know, if she had had different opportunities, how she would have influenced somehow the world by discovering something. Or, you know, I remember she had a KitchenAid mixer.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a little pasta maker to make Chinese noodles. And
hand,
you know,
cranked.
We had to hand crank it. And she thought, you know, I think the mixer could do that. And then she asked somebody at Montgomery Ward to help her manufacture this thing that would spin the noodle machine, the pasta machine. And, you know, you can buy one of those now for your KitchenAid. And I thought, wow, she should have had a patent on that. But, you know, like when she was in the sixth grade, she won a contest for best handwriter. Mm-hmm. in her school, and she won a fountain pen. And Linda didn't ever know about this, but I have that fountain pen that she won, and it's one of my treasured objects. Mm-hmm. Of all time, you know. And I think about living in our house, which, you know, we grew up in that house.
Mm-hmm. Well, seven kids, and eventually Dad ended up buying out his two brothers. And the market became Chan's Market in the 1957-ish. There was, again, as many partnerships with family tend to have challenges.
Yeah.
So Uncle Richard and Uncle David ended up opening another store in Visalia, a competing store. But Dad, all of us kids, the seven kids, all worked in the store. And I'm number five child, but number four son, the youngest son. When I graduated from college, Mom and Dad gave me the opportunity to take over the business. But by then, I think the emphasis to all the kids were that go to school, educate yourself, and get to a point where you didn't have to work 80 hours a week.
Well, and that also goes back to Mom, because she always told me that she felt if she could get the oldest kid, Lester, to go to college, that all the rest of us would just fall in line. And she was right.
Yep.
Because
yep,
they sent every one of us through college. And I think about my son, you know, Nathan, how when he was graduated from high school, I thought, you know, you need to go to college. And so he started college and he said, I don't like this. And he decided that he wanted to be a photographer. And so he somehow wrangled a job at the local TV station. And
well, he was at the local newspaper first, right?
Yeah, as a still photographer.
Yeah.
He was a stringer. But I remember he came home. He said, I think I have a job. And I said, where are you working? And he said, oh, KMPX, Channel 26. I said, what are you doing there? He said, I'm going to be a photographer. And I thought, they use still photographers at the TV station? And he said, no, I'm going to do video. I said, what do you mean you're going to do video? You've never done video before. He said, oh, it's all the same. And, you know, he was 17 years old. And he came back, and I thought, oh, yeah, And so he says, okay, I'm going to Fresno. I'm going to training. I said, what? For who? And he said, I just couldn't believe it. And he said, for KMPH. And I said, really? And so every day he went, and he said, yeah, I'm in training for a week. Well, on Wednesday, he came home and said, well, tomorrow I'm going out filming. And I said, you're going out filming? what exactly are you going to film? He said, oh, I'm just going to film, you know, an assignment, talk to people. And I said, is a reporter going with you? He said, no. And I said, well, how are you going to get people to talk to you? He says, I'll just ask questions and they'll answer me. And I was just...
Well, he was representing a local television. Everyone recognizes the Fox affiliate. And I guess it opened the doors a little easier.
I don't know, because he just went... Audrey had gone to perform in the flute choir on the early morning show. So rather than have me get up, he said, oh, I'll take her. So he took her. And then that's when he came home and told me, oh, I think I have a job.
Oh. Well, I'll jump ahead here, because he did went to larger markets, went to Albuquerque, where he met his wife, where he met Caitlin. And then eventually he's now working at ABC and still doing as a producer, photographer for ABC News out of the Washington Bureau.
Right.
And apparently he is there in the forefront as history is being made. Because some of the trips where he tells us about are amazing, how he gets involved. And he's quite the very successful young man. You should be proud of him. And we all are, obviously.
Well, I'm proud of him. But that, you know, when Mom said, you got to get the first one to go to college, and then the second one will fall in line, and all the rest will fall in line.
Well, that was a major accomplishment.
That stuck with me. Yeah. That really stuck with me. And I begged him not to go to Albuquerque. And he said, I'll never forget this. He said, I told him, you must promise me that you're going to enroll in some classes. And he said, I can't promise you that, Mom. And I said, I was really crestfallen. And he said, would you rather me enroll in classes, or would you rather me follow my passion? How am I going to answer that? I mean, a 17-year-old kid tells you that, and, you know, it's like, wow, okay.
Yeah. And it's obviously worked out very well for him. Yeah.
Well, and look at Michelle.
Well, yeah. But I don't want to jump too far ahead, because I know the emphasis was on the seven of us. That, it was an unspoken word. Everybody went to college. It was an accomplishment that I think Mom and Dad were very proud of. All of us got bachelor's degrees, and some went on to graduate work. And very successful as professionals in what we did. And I think, like I said, going back a little bit to the Chance Market story, that it was around for a long time. And many people were, well, let's see, as young people growing up in a relatively small community, there were, 35,000 people when I was in high school in the 60s, late 60s. I graduated in 67. But the fact that customers of the store were all walks of life. We had attorneys, doctors, we had guys who worked the farms. It was an interesting time of education, being in downtown Visalia. I still remember the close ties with all the Montgomery Wards people, because we were just around the corner from Montgomery Wards. We were on Locust and Main. And Main Street is where Montgomery Wards, but the back parking lot was backed up to the store. And all these guys would come in, and I look back at some of the stories, and the store became kind of the central focal point for a lot of people. It was had air conditioning, so during the summer, everybody came into the store, and just kind of a place to gather and to meet and catch up. That was kind of interesting. But, yeah, all of us graduating school, and the funny thing is, I laugh at this, that none of us went to the same schools. But just the whole gambit of places where people went.
And, well, it's because we ended up in different fields, and that's a tribute to Mom and Dad, that they let us follow our passion, as it were. And so we ended up with a teacher, a pharmacist, another teacher, another teacher, a banker, a graphic artist, and a entrepreneur, I guess. Entrepreneur. So it is. It's been an interesting family.
Yes.
And everybody used to comment because we all started with L.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was always, that was interesting. Lester, Lyman, Lawrence, the three older brothers, then Linda, and then Lanny, Lori, and Lynette. Mm. And the story is that they got started naming Lester because it was a, when mom and dad were married, they got married in a good friend's house. His name was Lester. And so dad named the first son, and they just kind of fell in line. But, you know, to digress a little bit, the conversation, talking about mom and being the Renaissance woman, she made the clothes for all of us. I think it was funny to see the four sons all dressed in same color or same material in the shirts. I didn't get a haircut from a barber because mom did all of our hair. I didn't, and when I went away to college.
Every Saturday night.
Yeah. And every night at 6 o'clock was dinner time. The store was open. Dad would open the store early, but officially it would be open at 8 o'clock to six, Monday through Saturday. Sunday was the store was closed, but it was a day of cleaning up and stocking and doing some book work. But the store was a focal point for all of us. Again, we all worked there, and I think helped all of us become better communicators with. I mean, we were in a situation where we had to be very outgoing and working with other people and dealing with customers all times. But, yeah, mom, like I said, cooked. She was a wonderful cook. She was a Blue Ribbon baker. Later in life, after she retired and had time, she would enter, at the encouragement of family and friends, her baked goods at the Tulare County Fair. And she won many a blue ribbon for her baked items. And she had a green thumb that was compared to no one. I think you kind of follow in that, but yours more ornamental. Mom was more in tune to getting growing
production.
Fruits and vegetables.
Production, yeah.
But she would enter some of her fruits and vegetables at the fair and win. And seamstress, like I mentioned, she made clothes for everybody. She had in her mind, when we moved into the house at 425 on Race Street, the story there is that I was born in a home that was, I guess, her second home in Visalia, and it was an old Victorian built in the late 1890s, I believe. And it was in the 1963-64 we moved to the house on Ray Street, which is a whopping three blocks north of where we were raised. But the house was a much bigger house, and that's a story perhaps we can go into a little bit. But mom had all this furniture in the home, but she wanted to reupholster, but it was so expensive. So she ended up taking night classes on reupholstering furniture. And virtually every piece of upholstered furniture in the house, she had done.
and beautiful job. I mean, like a real professional. So really impressive. And it's not easy to do that upholstery work because I've tried.
Yep. But as accomplished as she was, it brings back an interesting story, too. When after Dad passed away, we realized that Mom never got a driver's license. She always depending on the kids or Dad to drive her everywhere. And I think she was 67.
69.
And she decided to get her driver's license because she, again, it was a sign of independence, I think, for her. So she wanted to learn how to drive in the car that she would take her tests in. She wanted to drive that car. So they went to the local Chevy dealership. Lawrence ended up taking her, and she selected a little small station wagon that she wanted to buy, and she was ready to write a check to purchase it. And the salesperson said, sorry, we can't sell you the car. And the reason being is she was an unlicensed driver.
So, I've never heard of that story.
So they ended up registering the car in Lawrence's name so she could learn how to drive the car, passed with flying colors, but I don't think she put a single highway mile on that car.
No.
She had the car 5 years and had less than 5,000 miles on it. Everything was done in town early in the mornings to avoid the big traffic issues, but that was her sign of independence.
Well, I remember, too, that she had to sign up for driving lessons because she didn't want any of us to teach her. And what happened was that when they called in to sign her up, the man on the other end of the phone said, "Well, how old is the student?" And I think it was Net who said, "Oh, she's 69." And he says, "16?" And Net says, "No, 6'9". And the guy was just like, "What?" So, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, she decorated the house. She was in the garden all the time. And that house is, you know, was built the same year that
she was born.
Yeah. Yes. And so, you know, when she passed away, it was really hard for us to think about the house going to anybody else. So we ended up in the house, and I remember the sign, because she had named the house the House of Chan.
Oh, yeah.
And had one of the high school students build a sign.
One of Lawrence's friends was taking wood shop.
Yeah.
And it was just at the end of the school year. So she had asked Lawrence, "Would you please, you know, have this?" She had a design in mind.
She did design it, yeah, with a pagoda top, and it was red, and it said House of Chan. And remember when we first moved in that sign went up, people would knock on the door and say, "Is the restaurant opened?"
Yeah. I remember that. I remember, yeah, there was a group of ladies who walked up to the door, knocked on the door, and I answered the door, and I said, "No, it's a house.
Yeah.
It's a residence." Oh, okay. But everybody knew the House of Chan.
Yeah.
Again, it's a relatively small town. I still remember getting mail addressed to the House of Chan, Visalia, California.
Yeah. And, you know, when we moved in, we couldn't have it the House of Chan because, of course, I'm a Luna.
Yes.
So we, Bob and I, just racked our brains and racked our brains. And finally, I thought, oh, the answer is so easy and it's so clear, Casa de Luna.
Yep.
And but I remember you telling me, because we're getting up in age and it's getting harder to take care of the garden and everything, and how sad I was to think about leaving the house, and you saying, "It's just a building, you know, your memories are your memories." And I thought about every Christmas, I look at the stairway, because I expect Dad to come walking down those stairs in his red sweater and everything. I still do that. Every Christmas, I think that he should just walk down those stairs.
Yeah, it was a very close family. We did a lot of things together. But as we all grew, and, you know, it was difficult for Lester, who ended up living majority of his adult life in Austria, that he had actually majored in German. And his professor at the College of Sequoia said, "Well, if you really want to learn the language, go to Germany." So he immersed himself in the German language and the culture. I guess it was probably his junior year. I think he had 2 years at COS. Then his junior year, it wasn't an exchange program or anything. He just up and went to Germany and enrolled in University of Munich. And I think for 9 months he went to school, and for 3 months he hitchhiked all throughout Europe. It was I remember him into Turkey, and I remember once he was calling collect from Stockholm, Sweden, and I answered the phone, and the operator came on, "Do we accept a collect call from Stockton?" And I don't know anybody Stockton, says no. So the mom gets up, I tell her what happened. She says, "Are you sure you said Stockton?" I said, "I think so."
The phone rang again. I think that was me, Buck.
Oh, I think it was you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. Because then everybody started yelling at me because they said, "Why didn't you say yes? Because it's Lester calling." I said, "Well, I didn't know anybody in Stockton who would make a collect call."
Well, anyway, yeah. So the point being that we're scattered. But every year now, ever since Mom, well, we used to get together with Mom. That was a focal point. But Lori has been gracious to open her home every year at Christmas time. We have a big family reunion. All the Chans come together and celebrate our family, our close family, and of course Christmas. But it's still a fun time. It'll be interesting to see the next generation.
Yeah.
I think Lawrence's oldest daughter, Erica, is now in a position that she would like to take over. This last Christmas, Camille, Linda's daughter, hosted at her home up in Healdsburg. So we're traveling a little bit, but yeah, this time to pass the torch. So
yes,
that's good.
Yes. I think one more year and I'll be done. So,
One more thing about Mom and her driving, though. But she was always, you know, a very intelligent woman, like you say. And she got to a point where she recognized that she could no longer drive. And she just decided, here it is, I'm done driving. And she,
which is really unusual.
Yes, she was a very woman who thought things out and just really realized it was time to say that I can't drive safely anymore. And that's great. I mean, that's, you look at Mom, she's always very accomplished. And that. Now, Dad, you touched on it a little bit, and we'll have to move on here real quickly. But Dad was the very gregarious individual. I think at the drop of a hat, he would have a, you know, opportunity to party. When the store, he would be out making the rounds at 6:30 in the morning, virtually Monday through Saturday. We delivered produce, farm fresh produce, to many of the restaurants in the Visalia area. He'd go out, and there'd be a group of restaurants he'd visit first thing. And I remember going with him a couple of different times. And the restaurants got to a point where they just depended on him. He knew what they needed. So he would do an inventory, walk through the fridge, and then he'd mark down, this is what they needed. And then I, before going to school, would take a delivery and make a delivery prior to the 8 o'clock school hour and deliver produce to these various restaurants and institutions first thing in the morning. And but many an afternoon, Dad would always take an 11 o'clock lunch. He tried to watch the baseball games when he could, and he was a fight guy, watched the fights in the evenings. But he would just decide, oh, somebody would come by the store, let's come by the house, let's have some cobbler. Mom just made some fresh fruit cobbler from the fruit that she had harvested. And he'd always have a glass of wild turkey to go with it.
Yeah,
that's his favorite. Got a little cocktail. But Dad always had loved parties. And growing up, whenever we had a party, we'd go out. We'd always go to the Pagoda restaurant. I didn't know there was another restaurant other than Chinese for forever. But, yeah, there were fun times. Dad would have plenty of times. The big event of the year was a Chinese New Year party. And it would be hosted at the house. And this was kind of a PR thing and also just a time to celebrate friends and family because the customers that we dealt with became friends. And we would have 100, 120 people at the house. And Mom
sit
would
down.
Do all the cooking.
Sit down, too. Yep. Yeah.
Set up tables and chairs. Mm-hmm. But Mom would do all the cooking, and it was always Asian food. And people would look forward to coming to the house to celebrate Chinese New Year's. And fun times, fun times. I remember one Chinese New Year real quick, that Sandy Robinson, who was the sheriff of Tulare County, was a friend. And he would come by and he'd celebrate. And Dad and he were on the front porch at 507 School Street. That's the house of the old Victorian. And they're lighting firecrackers. That both had cigars. They're both smoking cigars. Light the firecracker with a cigar, throw it off the porch. And just, you know, part of the Chinese festival. But a local Visalia police officer pulled up, and I guess somebody had complained or heard the loud bangs. And I remember I was standing there at the porch, too, because I was throwing a few, too. But Sandy Robertson turned to Dad and said, "Yay, I'll take care of this." So he walked down to the police officer. Police officer tipped his hat and drove off. And resumed to throw off the firecrackers. But that's the kind of town it was, and perhaps it was good times and a little lot simpler times, yeah.
Definitely.
But I don't know if you have anything else you want to bring up at this point. I know that the store is a focal point for all of us. Eventually, the store, when I graduated in 71, and we touched on it, where none of the kids wanted to take the store. We had all gotten our professions and wanted to do things. And so there was a closing party. It was a surprise party we threw in 1971. I believe it was in June. And we had invited everybody to come over. Kathy, who I was dating at the time, we'd gone and out. And I think you weren't with us. But I think Nat was with us, and we went out to have dinner. And then we were going to drive by the store just to, for old time's sake. But we were going to arrange to get to the store, decide to go in. But then we drove by the store, heading toward the store. And Dad looked up and said, Isn't that Lori?
I know. I was watching out for the car, and he did see me, and that was kind of not to plan, but it all worked out. And yeah, the store was great. You know, we had a wonderful childhood in my memory, but I know that Lester, Mike had told Lester, Lester had told Mike that, gee, you know, we were poor and, you know, we didn't have a lot. But I never felt that way. Did you?
Nope.
I mean, we never wanted for anything. I mean, we didn't have the best of everything, but, you know, it was always, I never felt that way.
Yeah. In hindsight, there are times that I regretted not being able to go to the lake on a Saturday or something because we work Saturdays.
Yeah.
You know, all of us had to work. But I look back in hindsight and
I think that taught us to the greater good.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, it's just a lesson that a lot of people don't know now, you know.
Responsibility.
Yeah.
And know our limits but to take responsibility and do
and be
right.
Grateful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
You don't need, you don't need three TVs or whatever. We got by with one.
Yes, that's right.
Growing
that's
up. Right. But yeah, it did great memories of the family, mom and dad, and just fun times to sit down and talk.
Yes, and the idea that what we are talking about, you know, our grandchildren's grandchildren could hear us, you know, in the future far away, to think that we're committing these words to forever is amazing.
Yes. And I'm glad that you invited me to join you today, because I know you were thinking of doing it with Audrey or Nathan, son or daughter, but they're being away. Nathan living in the D.C. area and Audrey living up in the Oakland area. But this is good.
It's been fun.
I'm glad you brought it to join you.
It's been fun. And, you know, whatever the future holds, you know, we all, like you said, we'll always have our memories.
Yep.
So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.